You're listening to Irish Sports Talk.
Hello, Nerding fans, and welcome to Irish Sports Talk. This is episode 426, and we're going to talk about Notre Dame's victory over North Carolina State. Good day for the Irish. Randall's here as well. We're going to talk about our top four or six or ten, how we would rank the different college football teams. And we'll see soon enough where Notre Dame falls in the college football ranking. Randall, when we were doing that, and let's start with that, but when I was doing this, I went back and forth because it is tough to do, and I think it gets easier to rank the top four as the season goes on. It might be a little bit tougher to rank maybe 5 through 10 might be a little bit tougher because it just ends up there's a lot of teams that have two losses.
There's so many scenarios.
But also have maybe two really good wins, and so it just becomes tougher. But I think the top four becomes easier to iron out. So I'm a little surprised where I have Notre Dame. they're higher than I expected to have them. But I guess let's just go. I'll read off my top four. And I just went through six because there was so many. And I was going back and forth, moving Clemson around, moving Alabama around. And I did value...
So you don't have Alabama right there at the top.
I don't, no.
Reuben.
And the reason is because I value quality wins. And so
what's that?
A quality win is against a team that would beat majority of the top 25 teams, wouldn't get blown out at least, would have a shot at winning a top other teams in the top 25. So here's what I've got. I have Georgia as the number one team. They have wins against other very... quality teams like Notre Dame, of course. And I'm just surprised that the AP has Alabama so far ahead of
because
Georgia.
Of who they are. It's who they are.
Yeah, but that's dumb because this is about this season. History doesn't matter. It shouldn't matter. It's all about 2017.
Let's just say there's not enough time spent on these polls when they put these out.
Well, there definitely was reason to have an actual college football playoff ranking system. And it might not be done perfect, but I think it's done well enough. And usually at the end of the year, I agree with who's going to the playoff. I have not had an issue with who has gone to the playoff so far since the playoff has started. So I've got Georgia at number one, and then I have Notre Dame at number two. And partly because I don't think there's another team that has a better or has a loss that hurts less. Like this loss is so little. It's 1 point. It was at home for Notre Dame, so that hurts them maybe a little bit more than if a 1 point loss at Georgia. But I have Notre Dame at number two because of the wins they've accumulated. They have wins against now a Boston College team that looks decent, not a good team, but they finally look decent. They're not a carpet. Michigan State destroyed Michigan State at Michigan State. Michigan State's looking good, and then obviously the last 2 weeks against USC. USC went out and destroyed. I forget who they played.
Arizona State,
and then finally just a few days ago, North Carolina State. Another very solid performance. Now, what could change where I have Notre Dame, and the college football playoff ranking committee has said that the only thing that matters is the games that have been played to this point. So the following week, the strength of schedule can change because for Notre Dame's case, if Michigan State racks up a few more losses, or if USC or North Carolina State, if those teams accumulate a few more losses, then Notre Dame doesn't look nearly as good.
Yeah.
And so this is why I have Notre Dame where they're at now. But if each of these teams pick up a win this upcoming week, then I would drop Notre Dame out of that number two spot. But that's where I have them right now, number two. And I'll just go through my top four, and then you can give your top four. Then I have Clemson at number three, and this was a little bit tough.
Man.
one and two were pretty clear. One was very clear to me. Two, after looking at it, was pretty clear too. And I'm trying not to be a homer. I don't like being a homer.
Sound a little bit like
I know one. I sound like it. But I think I'm being critical. Clemson at number three, they have wins against an Auburn team that I think is good. They were ranked number 13 at the time. They're 16th now. They have two losses. They lost to Clemson. They lost a few weeks ago to LSU by one possession. So I still feel like Auburn is a legitimate good team that would that could beat a majority of the top 25 teams, or at least, yeah, pretty much. Maybe not a majority, but they would win. They would be favored against a lot of the teams in the top 25. And Clemson also destroyed Boston College 34-7. And Boston College team, again, at the time, through the first maybe 3 or 4 weeks, didn't look very good. But now, as we're in week nine?
Yeah.
Heading into week 10, looks really good.
Yeah.
And then they beat a Virginia Tech team that is also a really good team. So they did lose to Syracuse, and the reason I have Notre Dame ahead of Clemson is because of this loss is not a good loss. It was a one-possession loss at Syracuse, and it was on either Thursday night or Friday night, so it wasn't your typical game. It was kind of, it was an off night, and sometimes those are just tougher to have your team prepared for. Not really an excuse, but a more difficult situation to be in. And then number four, I've got Penn State.
Even though they lost.
They just lost, but it was by 1 point. Wait, is that right? Was it just 1 point?
Yeah.
1 point loss. It was at Ohio State, so they'd have been in enemy territory. 1 point loss. But what they've done up to this point is really impressive, with most notably the win over Michigan, which Michigan, again, if they rack up a few more losses, isn't going to look as impressive, but it still looks like a really solid win over Michigan, over Northwestern, and over Iowa. The Iowa game was really close, but they did come away with a win against Iowa. So that's my top four. I've got Georgia, Notre Dame, Clemson, Penn State. No Alabama. No undefeated. No undefeated Miami. And here's what's a little bit. I agree. It's tough for me to know how much to gauge losses. Because there are some teams that are undefeated, like Alabama and Miami. And Wisconsin, who has played almost... Anyway, go ahead.
Well, unlike you, I do think going undefeated is hard to do. I mean, that's why I think Notre Dame should have been in the championship game in 2012. Yes, they were overmatched, but going undefeated is very, very hard to do, and you see that year in and year out. There's only one or two teams. It always seems at this point in the season, it's like, oh, there's going to be a couple teams. What are we going to do? There's going to be a couple undefeated teams. It never happens. And so being, you know, going undefeated is just very hard to do, to win week in and week out and be ready for every single game. I'm just in the case of Clemson. So obviously, I have Georgia first. They're undefeated. They played ranked teams. Their schedule shows it.
If Georgia is not number one when the rankings come out, I will agree with you that the ranking system is broken and it cannot be trusted.
Georgia has to be number one.
I agree. If it's not, it would blow my mind.
Yeah. And then I have Alabama number two because they are undefeated. Their schedule is not very good.
How do you have? I was debating about Alabama, Miami, who should be ahead, and I do agree with you. After going back and forth a little bit, I do agree that Alabama, even though the schedule I think is fairly similar, Alabama has been destroying the teams they're playing, and Miami has been. There have been close games. Florida State a 4 point win, Georgia Tech a 1 point win, Syracuse a 6 point win, an 8 point win.
Yeah, so I will still say that I don't have all the undefeateds at the top. I don't. There's still, but Alabama's just dominating, and they've been doing it over and over again.
They're
undefeated.
They're undefeated. Fine, stick with that. Don't tell me what they did last year.
Okay, but they're 8-0. Then I have Notre Dame number three.
Okay, so you do have Notre Dame in the top four.
Well, yeah, they have four wins against teams, Power 5 opponents with winning records, and they've dominated teams.
And here's where Notre Dame is the best one-loss team, and I don't know how. I don't
I agree.
To me, that is crystal clear. At this point in the season, again, it could change. Next week, after some of Notre Dame's opponents end up losing, that could change. But for right now, they have the most impressive. They are the most impressive one-loss team.
Yeah,
so at least we agree with that.
Yeah, and then number four, I have Clemson.
Okay, so we're pretty close then. You just have Alabama a lot higher than what I do.
Yeah, Clemson. Yes, they have one loss, but they have played a good schedule. They were lost by 3 points to Syracuse, and that's my point. That's why it's hard to win game in, game out. You know, whatever it was Thursday night. You can say all that.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard. That stuff comes up for every team, and so it's hard to win. Clemson didn't do it. They had the one loss. It was a 3-point loss, but they have 6 wins against Power 5 opponents with winning records. I mean, they beat Auburn, they beat Louisville, they beat Virginia Tech. You know that they're doing it the right way. It's just they messed up that night they played Syracuse. So those are who I have top four. You want to hear the rest of them?
Yeah, I do.
At number 5, I have Wisconsin. Yeah, their schedule isn't that great, but they're undefeated again.
Okay, why do you have them? Why do you have Wisconsin ahead of Miami? Because I have Miami.
Their wins are better than Miami.
Barely.
Miami is struggling, and I'm just hoping that Miami wins this next week so that they're undefeated when they come to Notre Dame.
Yeah. I would disagree that their wins are better because of the opponents. What, Randall? they played USU, Florida Atlantic. I think it's Florida Atlantic. FAU, BYU, which is one of the worst teams in the country, and then against teams that are
still beating 40-6.
I know, but they Purdue 17-9, Northwestern 33-24. I'm just saying. I think Miami's wins are against better opponents, even and that's why they're not putting teams away as much.
Miami has let Toledo score 30 points on them. They barely beat Florida State. They beat Georgia Tech by 1 point. They did beat Syracuse and North Carolina. They beat him by 5, and they were behind for a lot of that game. I mean, they're just squeaking by.
You know what?
Wisconsin has looked a lot better in their games than what Miami has.
You're starting to convince me a little bit about Miami.
You talk to anybody about Miami, and they're hoping they win next week. You talk about Wisconsin, like, there's a good chance they're going to win. They haven't had convincing wins.
Yeah.
So, number 5, Wisconsin. Then number 6, Penn State. Okay. I know they just lost, but it's to a top 10 team. So Ohio State is in the top 10. But they've been putting up good wins. They have 3 wins against Power 5 teams that have winning records, which they've had. That's what count. Yes, they had that one loss. It was by 1 point. But they have been beating good teams. And they've been doing it in pretty dominating fashion in a lot of their wins. Then I have...
You know how I said that Notre Dame has the least painful loss? I do take it back. I do think Penn State's loss is a little less... It hurts a little bit less.
And they played better for 3-4 quarters of that game. They backed off.
Than Ohio State did.
Yeah, they played conservative, just like Notre Dame is known to do in years past, and let Ohio State get back into the game.
Yeah.
They should have won that game. If Penn State and Ohio State play 2 more games next 2 weeks, Penn State would win both of them. I'm convinced.
I'm not so convinced. I did expect Ohio State to win that game.
I didn't, but. So, that Penn State, then I have Oklahoma. Oklahoma does have one loss, but they beat Ohio State by 3 scores. And then Ohio State. Okay, Oklahoma's number 7. Ohio State is number 8. I kept changing it, so it's getting confusing.
So where do you have Miami?
Ohio State's at number 8, and that's because they lost at home by 3 scores to Oklahoma. There's no way they should be number 3 like the AP. There's no way they are.
Yeah, they should not.
They're living
on
their preseason hype and their name. Ohio State is not up there.
I disagree. They are a very, very good team, but They were not impressive at all in weeks 1 and 2. Against Indiana, they struggled for a half of football, and then they got destroyed against Oklahoma. But since then, they have been very, very impressive. Blowing teams out, beating...
But it's against bad teams.
Well, not Penn State. Yeah, it's all...
Well, except for Penn State. That was their first win against a good team.
Yeah, I know.
Well, and then at number 9, I have Miami.
Okay.
Then number 10 is TCU. Iowa State has been a thorn in the flesh for some of these teams. So,
anyways, you should do this exercise, and then maybe you won't be quite so critical of the college football ranking. Because
I agree.
You've been very critical of the college football ranking. I have not. I've defended them, and I usually see where they're coming from and can like kind of. And in fact, usually I would agree with where they're at.
Which it's pointless. Sorry, this. Notre Dame fans are listening to this podcast, so whatever, they probably all hate Ohio State as well. But if you look at this scenario, Penn State should get in the playoffs over Ohio State. Last year, Penn State beat Ohio State, won the Big Ten championship, and still were left out of the playoff. Yeah, they had more than one loss. They had 3 losses, I will say it. But just because Ohio State beat them, and even if they go to the Big Ten championship, that does not mean that they should get in over Penn State.
Didn't you have an issue with that?
I did.
Well, you have Penn State ahead of Ohio State now.
I know.
So you're doing the same thing that the college football playoff ranking did, the committee.
Oh.
And I do too. I have Penn State.
It's not the end of the season. That might change that when the Big Ten championship comes around. If one of them has 3 losses, then yes, they should. Well, whatever.
Yeah. All right.
Moving on. Notre Dame football is so much fun to watch right now. It's just. The game, I don't know, it was halftime. I was just like, sat back and I was like, are we actually watching Notre Dame football? Where it is so much fun to just watch them win and convincingly. Like, I've never watched Notre Dame team
like
this.
You don't have words, and it's okay, because I think a lot of fans are right there with you. Notre Dame comes away with a big win.
By the way, Notre Dame beat USC 49-14, in case anyone forgot. So,
let's talk a little bit about some things that we got right, some things we got wrong. Our score predictions, Randall, were reasonably close. Now, that's partly due because of the special teams and defensive scores, but I think I had 34-20, or was it 35-20? It was 34 or 35-20.
It was 34.
I think it was 34.
We both had 34.
We both had 34. I had 20. You had 24. And I predicted the interception, which did come to fruition. I'm a genius, I guess you could say. And that's one of the things we got right.
My score prediction was 34-24. And I said the reason that it was actually 24 for them is because I didn't think they would get the interception. If they did get an interception, it would be less than that. So
you might have predicted 14.
I should have. If I just predicted that interception, I would have been... 34-17, so a little bit closer.
Some things I hated was North Carolina State's logo on their helmets. That was just awful. It looked like a drawing out of a Grimm Fairy Tales, but done back in the 1600s or whenever the Grimm Fairy Tales were written.
It doesn't look professional.
It looked awful, yeah. It looked like sketched by some guy who lives in a hut in Germany.
It just looks like a... You know, like it should be a AAA team in baseball. Yeah. I will say that before the game, you know, I was talking with different people and they were kind of worried about this game. And as it got closer, I did feel more and more confident because I did some more research and I started looking at North Carolina State's opponents, you know, and their rushing offense and why North Carolina State was ranked so high. And if you, I don't have the paper where I started looking at that, but they had played horrible rushing offenses, and that's why their rankings are. That's why they were the number 6 team.
Louisville, they held Louisville to low. I assume Louisville.
Well, they held the team. Here's the thing: they held the teams to less than what they averaged, but most of them
they held Notre Dame
were
to less
under
than what,
50.
What,
I think Louisville might have been the only one ranked higher than 50.
I mean, Notre Dame only rushed for 318 yards, which is under the average. So, they did.
So that was the big concern, and. I never really thought that it was going to be as close as what was expected. But no. Here's where I'll throw in where this I listened to the podcast, North Carolina State podcast, on, I think it was Friday. It was after we had recorded our preview. But they titled, the title was Notre Dame fans. And it's something about how we love them or something, was being sarcastic. And they laid into Notre Dame fans and just how they're so, you know, they're cocky and they just arrogant. They just think they're going to win, you know, and they read some stuff off of message boards that they've been trolling, I guess. I don't know if they actually counted, but, you know, they said, oh, the Notre Dame fans are saying, oh, we'll be able to run the ball against them and, you know, they're not as good as what their ranking shows and we should be able to run and we're going to win this game. And these guys just thought it was terrible. And they predicted they would win, I think it was like 38-24 or something, North Carolina State would win. So I kind of thought they were being the one. I was kind of whatever. And anyways, I refrained from saying too much after the game. I did tweet them and say, ask if they would do another episode on Notre Dame fans.
This is what happens, Randall, when I'm not home to keep you in line and keep you out of trouble.
Hey,
you start antagonizing people.
But I couldn't resist because I wanted to say, oh, so they were right, or make more comments, but it was just funny to listen to how terrible, how much they hate Notre Dame fans, which...
Oh, they actually hated Notre Dame fans?
Like, oh, yeah. They can't stand them.
So it's kind of like us and Ohio State fans.
Pretty much.
Man, so, that...
Which, whatever, Notre Dame fans, they're always, you know, they didn't mention how Notre Dame fans think they're always relevant and whatever.
Yeah, it's probably because most Notre Dame fans don't even really recognize or realize that North Carolina State is a football team.
Yeah.
But
I did see, you know, Saturday morning at a gas station, you know, the SUV pulls up. They got North Carolina State flags, and the guys were decked out in their North Carolina gear. He had some cool pants. They were red pants with the North Carolina State logo all over them. Yeah. So they spent quite a bit of
money
on the gear, but I'm sure that was a long ride home.
I hope they made it at least to the first quarter, because then at least it would have been enjoyable. Yeah, I know. I'm just saying. At least they would have enjoyed a quarter.
Yeah. And here's the thing. I do think North Carolina State is a good football team. I do. It'll be fun to watch them play Clemson this next week. I'm pretty sure that's their next opponent. And so I do think North Carolina State is good, and Notre Dame is just finally playing good and dominating teams, ranked teams.
Like, Randall, I view myself as very skeptical. And I know if you're a new listener to the podcast and you hear me put Notre Dame at number 2 in the ranking, you probably think, there's no way. This is a homer all the way. But let's look back at history just very briefly. This will not take long. Notre Dame goes to the Fiesta Bowl against Ohio State. I predicted and expected them to lose because Notre Dame's defense was awful, had been proven and shown to be awful most of the year, and I was right. And you were saying the same thing too. Yeah. So it's not like I'm blindly... I don't have blind faith in Notre Dame at all. I expected the USC game to be very close, and possibly if it came down to one possession in the fourth quarter for USC to win that game. And so it's not like I'm not a homer.
Oh, I just not at
think,
all. I will
I just
back
think
that up.
I think Notre Dame is really good right now.
Well, here's what I think it is. I think a lot of people were worried about this North Carolina State game because it's so hard to believe in Notre Dame. When we finally do, our hopes and dreams come crashing
down.
And
you know what? This will last.
Every time.
If Notre Dame would go to the playoff, this hope will live on for the next 3 years, where fans will have just this hope every season that, oh yeah, we're pretty good. We'll probably get to the playoff again.
But we're scared to...
Until Notre Dame goes through another season or 4-8 season or something similar to that to bring them back down to earth and where it takes them forever to get back off the ground and back onto the wagon.
Well, here's something to think about. This is the fourth year in the last six that Notre Dame was in the talks of being in the playoffs or title contention going into November. 2012, 2014, 2015, and now this year.
Mm-hmm.
There's only been 2 years that Notre Dame hasn't been in the talks of the playoffs or title contention going into November, exactly this time of the year. I mean, we were undefeated going to the Florida State game,
mm-hmm.
14. Everything fell apart. And so that's why I think it's so hard. We're scared because it's always falling apart. I think this year is different. Like, you know, maybe they could still lose a game. But it's not, they're not going to lose the next four. You know, like they did in 14.
Yeah.
This team is much better than that. It would take.
And even in 2015, they weren't putting teams away consistently.
Yeah.
Like.
Well, even 2012, they were beating teams by a couple points. I mean, it was all close, low-scoring games. I mean, and here's the thing. Even last year, as much as, you know, it's horrible, 4-8, and I think everybody's shocked at the big turnaround, you know, that don't follow Notre Dame as closely. But if you look at it, it could have been completely turned around. Notre Dame could have been 8-4.
Which season? Just some
small, last year.
Yeah.
They were all except one game. Seven of those games were with one score game. One score, and that could have all flipped. You know, you win a couple, though. It could have, it would have still been a bad season. People wouldn't have enjoyed it. It would have still been 8-4, and there would have been a lot of complaints, but it was that close.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's just, I think now this North Carolina State kind of finally, I think people are believing in Notre Dame. Even
national media putting Notre Dame
people in in Notre Dame.
We were talking a little bit about difference between this year and 2015. And yeah, I just want to read off some of the close games that Notre Dame had in 2015. Second game of the season against Virginia. Okay, Malik Zaire went down, but that was a 34-27 win. A week later against Georgia Tech, it was an 8-point win, 30-22. And then a few weeks later, the loss to Clemson. And then the midway through the season, a 10-point win over Southern Cal, which was, at the time, felt like the best win that could ever be expected until this year. And then Temple, a 4-point win. Pittsburgh, a 12-point win. And then Stanford, he had the loss, and then the bigger loss to Ohio State at the end of the season in the Fiesta Bowl.
But still, you weren't beating.
But you weren't blowing teams out.
You weren't beating top 15 like teams by 20 some points.
Exactly.
You weren't even beating unranked teams by 20 points.
Yeah, you were just comfortably beating unranked teams. Yeah.
Well, this game, you know, it was always the question, you know, what about Notre Dame? You know, what are they going to do when they face some kind of adversity? And I think that was answered in this game. I mean, the way the game started, it could have, I think in other years, this could have easily, the train could have kind of derailed in that first quarter, and it would have been a disaster. I mean, you know, they might have come away with the win, but it would have been very close. You know, what was the spread? 3-4 points?
No, for North Carolina State.
Oh, it did go up. Never mind.
It was 7. It was 7.5.
But it would have been much closer. But this team, like Brian Kelly said, they didn't flinch. After that blocked punt, you know, for the touchdown, this team didn't flinch. They went out there, scored right away, and showed showed North Carolina State that we're not scared of you. We're still going to play our game, and it doesn't matter. We made a mistake, but we're going to get over it, and we're tough enough to beat you and put you away.
And when North Carolina State did score their offensive touchdown, Notre Dame responded with a long drive. Actually, they responded with two consecutive touchdowns.
Yeah.
Which, again, I just think shows the maturity of this team and not, I don't know.
The confidence in themselves.
The confidence and just the, yeah, maybe confidence is the best way to describe it. I didn't watch the entire game live, but there was never a moment where I felt like, fine, full disclosure, I only watched about half of the first quarter live.
You make me sad.
I did make up for it then. But as far as watching it live, I wasn't even concerned that Notre Dame was down, because I had just this confidence that I think this team has in themselves. I haven't them. Okay, let's talk more about the game. First off, it's just some of the dumb comments that Flutie made.
Oh,
in the first quarter, he said that he was talking about the inconsistency of the running game, and it always seems like it takes a little bit for Notre Dame to wear down and get in a flow. I mean, sometimes they score on the, yeah, they have been scoring on the opening drives, but it's still, there are always inconsistencies throughout the game in the running game. Like, yeah, there's runs that go for 0 yards or a few that go for a loss, and there's a couple big ones. But he made it sound like there was one good run in the first quarter And other than that, it was just awful. And Notre Dame had 10 carries for, I believe, 58 yards in the first quarter. But it was just awful and inconsistent.
Yeah, there's a lot of – I know there's a lot of people complaining about him, and it seems like he doesn't – either doesn't do his homework or he doesn't want to give Notre Dame credit. I'm not a fan. I can't remember the exact comment, but basically, oh, you know, this hasn't happened, and the next play it happened, you know, and he's
– Well, the one thing he got right was he was talking about – Notre Dame was on defense, was sitting on the routes and was attacking the curls and the out routes that North Carolina State was throwing and batting a lot of balls down, especially Julian Love, who's doing a phenomenal job. And then he said, pretty soon we're going to see a double move. And it was just a few plays later, Julian Love got burned on a double move. I think it was on second down. But it was a big gain, probably 15, maybe close to 20-yard gain, and move the chains, obviously. So, he gets some things right.
He basically calls a Notre Dame game probably how you would call an Alabama game at this point, where you, according to where you have them ranked in your top 10, I should say.
No, I had them at, I think I had them at 5.
Okay, top 5. I did have – this happened before the game, but here's a good example of a muscle flex. We haven't done it lately, but here's a muscle flex that I saw.
And again, just props to Ivy Envy, Cubs podcast. If you guys are Cubs baseball fans, I know the season's over for them now, but they do the podcast throughout the year, even in the off season. So if you want to know what's going on with the Cubs, go ahead and give them a listen. It's Ivy Envy.
Yeah, and the video – ND Football put out a video – from practice, and it was Kevin Stepherson making a one-handed grab for a touchdown. And it was out in front of him. Did you see it?
No.
It was out in front of him. He caught it with one hand, made the catch. Like, he couldn't have got both hands on it because it was too long. Anyways, the one comment underneath that was, get both hands on the ball. 3! Do not try to showboat with one-hand catches. Go Irish, go Notre Dame. But it's like, dude, he couldn't get two hands on the ball. But I just thought it was funny.
That is funny.
So you always have somebody that'll point out something that's wrong with it.
We definitely are going to talk about Stepherson more and the wide receiving group. But let's cover just in general the defense first this time, and then go through the position group and then the offense, because I'm really excited with where Stepherson is at in the offense. But defensively, it seemed like, and the either Flutie or Torito, I forget how to say his name, were talking about Notre Dame sitting on the routes of North Carolina State and not being afraid of the speed that North Carolina State had at the wide receiver position. And it was clear they were attacking and they were guessing where the routes were ending up for North Carolina State. And that's why we saw so many knockdowns. That's why we saw the pick six, which was hilarious because the entire offensive line was just sitting still.
Yeah.
And afterwards, Julian Love said that, I mean, he thought that Notre Dame probably was offsides, but either way, it wasn't. So
the coaches from North Carolina were fussing about that, and then they all said on the fourth down that Notre Dame was offsides as well.
Hey,
they're not going to say more because they don't want to get in trouble. I was like, you know, what a bunch of whiners.
It's ACC refs. It's their conference, too.
I almost thought David Shaw was in the building.
We saw a lot.
Well, if you, I'll throw this in. If you want a bad call, the Miles Boykin, the pass interference on Miles Boykin there at the end of the game was horrible. Brandon Wimbush was showing the ref on the Jumbotron. It would have been a touchdown, but it was the guy was holding on to Miles Boykin's, holding him back. I mean, it was the most. Boykin's even like waving his arm, like showing he couldn't run, and they never called it. So that was very obvious.
Yeah, Yeah, we'll go through the different position groups and talk more about Julian Love and some of the guys who were playing more in the defensive backfield. In fact, let's just go ahead. I'm just looking at my notes here. Oh, one thing that I liked, Brankley mentioned that they were, on third downs especially, they were using different coverages, and between 6 and 8 different coverages on third down to confuse Finley. And clearly, Notre Dame had a lot of success against Finley. Picked him off for the first time this year, forced him into under 50% completion percentage, completed 17 of 37, and just did a phenomenal job of breaking on routes. And a big part of those incompletions was because of the defensive backs breaking up those passes. But yeah, they were bringing there was a lot of variety even throughout the game. They brought some safety blitzes. They brought consecutive safety blitzes on one set of downs and didn't get to the sack, but they forced pressure and incompletions.
Yeah, they were definitely going to make North Carolina State beat them deep. And it's so good to see how well they execute game plans. Like, it's changed. We talked about, you know, how that on interceptions, like, they practiced that specific play, you know, the week before, just different things. And here, you know, we always talk about how, you know, defensive backs, especially cornerbacks, you know, play off the receivers, don't press them at all, and, you know, give up yardage, whatever. They totally turned that around. They were right there.
Yeah, and that was part of the game plan.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
And it worked great. Only giving up 7 points. They're 7 points to an offense that we said was the opposite of USC, in that it might not be explosive, but it was very consistent. They were consistently bad today.
But this defense can have game plans. They don't just have to play a defense every week. They can actually have a game plan for the opponent.
For that offense, yeah.
And put it into action and get it done.
And I know it's been said that, oh, this defense is simpler. I don't think it's simpler. Or maybe I don't think that's the big difference. I think the big difference is that the teaching, and that's what Brian Kelly was going off about in, I'm not sure if it was in the spring, but definitely in the winter, when he was talking about Elko is his ability to teach. And I think that is the biggest difference, is getting the players to understand what of playing football, playing defense.
Yeah, and then building that confidence. I mean, it's just like a quarterback, you know, you always say give him a couple of short passes, give him some passes that he likes and let him convert those, and it gives him confidence. Just, you know, work on the fundamentals. Just do some small things to get them good at it, and their confidence will grow off of that. And they've been playing outstanding. I mean, everyone talk about how great North Carolina State is, their defense, Notre Dame impressed.
All right, let's go through the different position groups on offense. Let's start with the defensive line, I guess. Defensive line. We saw Tagovailoa Amosa came in and played a huge portion of the game because of Jonathan Bonner going down. And what is the latest with the Jonathan Bonner injury?
He had a sprained ankle, but it was mild, and Brian Kelly said he's good to go for Saturday.
So he only recorded one tackle, had half a tackle for loss, but he was playing with energy, getting after guys. You saw him run after plays, and it's impressive.
You mean Bonner or Amosa?
No, Amosa.
Yeah, well, the very first play he came in after Bonner was hurt, he was in on the play, and it was a tackle for loss. And so he made an impact right away, and he's a freshman. I mean, wait, you know, give him another year in this system, in the program, he's going to be a very
strength program.
Good player.
Yeah, and just continuing to develop as a player, yeah, he's going to be good.
But, you know, this was a good, they were facing a good offensive line, and this defensive line was getting pressure on the quarterback. And Jay Hayes, you know, it's good to see him. And on the one play, he came around from behind and tried to strip the ball as the quarterback was throwing it, you know, missed it. But he's behind the quarterback already. I mean, he's coming around. They're they're getting to the quarterback. Trumbetti, was he credited with that sack then? It was Drew Tranquil. Him and Tranquil were both on that sack.
He was credited with half a sack, yeah.
So that was the one sack. Trumbetti was in there, and Khalid Kareem didn't get a sack this week, but you know, he had a tackle for loss and continued to make plays. And the crazy thing is, Trumbetti's the only guy that doesn't have an option to come back next year.
Wow.
And a lot of these are young guys. I mean, you look at Okora, Kareem, Hayes.
I thought Jay Hayes.
He could come back for another year. So, yeah, the defensive line just continues to impress.
Linebackers, we saw Coney got the start over Greer. Greer did come in and play. And, in fact, Greer and Coney were playing together when Coney moved over to Mike to fill in for Niles Morgan. And Morgan did go down with he went down for a little bit, but then he came back in pretty quickly, too. I don't think it was anything. Did he even make the injury? Did Brian Kelly even talk about him?
Brian Kelly said he has this chronic shoulder, and he's just kind of had issues all along with his shoulder. Like, seems like it doesn't take much for it to bother him for a little bit. He took a couple plays off, but then he came back in, and he actually got hit by what was a collision
with Greer
Martini, and it's a good thing. Like the announcer said, it was a good thing that Martini was off his feet when he got hit, because his knee was worked on last week. If he would have had his feet set, that could have been bad for his knee. Yeah. But yeah, it was a little worrisome to see some of these injuries, but nothing major coming out of that.
But Coney...
Coney is...
He's insane. And he was in on that fourth down stop close to the goal line when...
Oh, the fourth down stop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He had the stop there.
He had the fourth down, and he also had... I think it was just before that, he had like a delayed blitz where he hit the quarterback. Mm-hmm. Finley got the pass off, but Coney just wiped him out, and he was all over making tackles. He did get a game ball again and led the team in tackles. And he said that this last week that he wants to be the guy gets everyone excited on the defense.
Did he get the ball last week?
Yeah, 2 weeks in a row he's gotten a game ball for the defense.
I thought Kareem got it last week.
No.
Okay.
So it's 2 weeks in a row for, I think it was the week before.
Okay.
But it's 2 weeks in a row for Coney, and he's playing outstanding. It's fun to watch.
I hate how his hair, the bun.
You don't have a man bun, Ruben?
No.
You could possibly...
I have a line of hair I could do, but anyway. No one...
Hey,
no one wants to play see like me that, in a man bun. He can do
when
whatever...
When he play like that, he can do his hair however he wants to.
He can dye it pink for all I care if he keeps on playing the way he is.
And Tranquil, he was in on that sack. And then he was the one guy that was a little critical. He should have made the tackle. It was when they went for it on fourth down then. But it was a third down, and the snap kind of went over the head of the quarterback. You know, they had to run back to get it. And they were all the way back by the 30-yard line. Tranquil should have had him, should have wrapped him up, but Tranquil, once he's in a line for the quarterback, he can't adjust very well. But you can also look at it as if Tranquil would have tackled in there, they would have gone for the field goal.
Yeah.
And they would have probably got it.
But still, you still want, in the moment, you want him to make that play.
Yes. So that was one. But we've been a little more critical of the linebackers early in the year, but maybe they're not living up. Well, besides Tranquil has. But these guys are living up to the hype now.
Yeah, I think we were a little bit critical because there were some missed tackles. But
yeah.
But there are very few. Niles Morgan also had a ton of tackles. He had six.
Well, three linebackers. Coney, Tranquil, and Morgan were the leading tacklers on the team.
And we should mention this. Dalen Hayes, who doesn't often get a lot of tackles, against USC and again this week, he had five tackles against North Carolina State, and he's getting pressure.
He's getting a lot of
pressure. Yeah, it's not even about the tackles, but I know we didn't mention it the other week. I think it was against USC when he had a handful of tackles, but he makes an impact whether he is getting tackles or not. He was getting tackles today and had one tackle for loss. All right, defensive back. So on Notre Dame's their third down package, well, first off, you see Troy Pride Jr. a whole lot more, and I don't think this is how it was earlier. I just noticed it in this game. But on the third down package, you still have Julian Love, and you still have Crawford coming on as a nickel, but now you have Troy Pride Jr. as the other cornerback, the cornerback to the field, whereas and then Nick Watkins is off the field. So normally in their normal first and second down defense, you've got Julian Love, you've got Nick Watkins on their third down defense. When they're trying in third passing downs, you've got Troy Pride replacing Nick Watkins. And I thought he looked really good.
Yeah. He had one, there was one long reception that he hesitated, and it was just enough time for the receiver to get enough space, and Finley, you know, dropped it in over Pride, couldn't get back there in time. But it's part of the game plan, too. They wanted to get him beat, wanted them to beat him with deep throws. And so, you know, you can't blame too much. But that was, you could see that he hesitated a little bit, and it cost him. But he played very good coverage. And, yeah, he's fine for playing time with Watkins. I mean, Watkins has been the guy that's kind of has been giving up the touchdowns. But these defensive backs, I don't know what the final, how many passes did they knock down?
There was seven total, but Tranquil had one knocked down, and then safety Coleman also had one. So you had Love had three, and Watkins had one, and then Crawford had one.
Yeah. I think one of the best plays where you saw them playing together was that there's three wide receivers on one side, and it was Coleman, Love, and Crawford. You know, they tried to fake him out, but each guy picked up who they were supposed to and had perfect coverage on all of them.
No man left running free and wild.
But, you know, it looked like there was some confusion, but these guys knew exactly what they were supposed to be doing, and they had him covered, and there was nowhere to go. And so the defensive backs, especially Julian Love, is insane. Julian Love is now, he has two pick six for the year. And the last player to do that was Zivakowski in 2005. So it's been a while since we've seen a guy like that. But he is fifth in the nation for pass deflections. He's second in interception returns for touchdowns. And he's third in interception return yardage. So he is...
And definitely the one against North Carolina State, it was probably... Wasn't it close to 70 yards? I can look it up here, I guess.
69 okay. yards. And on that, the blocking. Blocking was
phenomenal.
He hung on to Dalen Hayes' jersey and just stayed with him. You know, obviously he was running slower than he could have, just stayed with him. And then when he needed that last block, he let him go, and it was perfect. And to see the replay, watching them come toward... It was one of the most beautiful sights I've seen at Notre Dame. It was just, it was perfect. And I've talked about the Twitter handle, is the fake Harry Heastan, I forget the exact name, but he tweeted out and says, looks like the defensive line has been practicing blocking practicing his blocking skills. So he thought that they looked pretty good as well. But yeah, Love, you got to keep him out there. And
they're playing smart. When North Carolina State was taking a shot at the end zone at the end of the half, Julian Love got one of his knockdowns at that point too, but just knock it down, not being dumb and going for the pick and potentially bobbling it up and North Carolina State getting a touchdown, just knocking it down, playing smart football.
Yeah, Love got... credit, they said it with the pass interference was on Love, but it was actually on Sean Crawford on the one play. Sean Crawford did get called for pass interference. And then Watkins, during the beginning of the game, he wanted to get that first interception. he ripped the ball away from the receiver, and he kind of jumped the route, and it looked like he wanted to get that first interception, but he didn't quite get it done. But these cornerbacks are playing very impressively.
And it was a good defensive game plan, too. I guess you could say
this was their best game, but I think it was more because of the game plan. The game plan was in their favor, basically.
Yeah, they were able to attack the short routes, and they probably could have got flagged once or twice in additional for some pass interference. They did have arms around the receivers a few times. They probably could have got flagged for that once or twice, but yeah, good defensive game plan executed very well, only giving up 7 points. North Carolina State, they did move the ball in the second half there, but Notre Dame came up big with the pick and with the stop on fourth down.
And the safeties, I did watch for them a little bit more. The thing is, the defensive line, linebackers, and the cornerbacks have been playing so well that he doesn't get back to the safeties. But they played close to the line of scrimmage in this game, and Elliott and Stud still were right up there and were playing good coverage. They were involved in some tackles, you know, in the backfield. Like, you know, they probably didn't get credited for it, but they were right there, ready to make the play, and they were doing what they needed to do. Elliott was the one that gave up the touchdown, and Notre Dame doesn't give up very much, is very good in their nickel package, but they did give up, you know, that's probably their weak link in that package is Elliott.
But that pass,
it was a good pass.
It was a phenomenal pass and catch.
Yeah.
But there was two great passes and catches on that drive to keep on moving the chains. And, I mean, you're not going to win them all. And those were two that, if Notre Dame's going to give up yardage, I'd rather it be like that, where the quarterback's making a great pass and the receiver is making a great catch, rather than just being a breakdown.
Yeah. Notre Dame still has only given up one rushing touchdown. And they've scored 30 rushing touchdowns. So they're plus 29 in their rushing touchdown department. That's insane.
It is insane. Okay, let's talk about the offense. Notre Dame did struggle moving the ball in the opening series. They had a nice run here and there, but then they also had some issues too. I really liked they used some tempo when they got Dexter Williams in there. This was probably, I don't know if it was early in the second quarter or late in the first, but they ran 4 or 5 times straight with Dexter, using a little bit of tempo, got some first downs, and then it had Josh Adams come in then again after that. But it was nice to finally have a healthy legitimate number two back to come in there and give Josh Adams a breather when he needed it.
Yeah.
Hasn't it pretty much been since Boston College that it's been Josh Adams until the game is over, and then you have your reserve come in to finish out the game?
Yeah, they did come away. Tony Jones did get hurt a little bit, but he's had these nagging. He just can't get rid of him. Brian Kelly said he is frustrated. So right now they need to get him where he needs to be mentally. He said it's his ankle, and he said he had a hip pointer in this game. So, but yeah, Dexter came in there and looked fresh. I mean,
it was just good to see that finally we've got a healthy backup.
We don't see as much of the two back sets like we did at the beginning of the year, but we haven't really needed it either.
And you definitely saw North Carolina State had success against Notre Dame. Especially on the edge, they were able to control the edge or the point of attack. Both when Notre Dame was running the ball, they were able to crash down, and on passing downs too, they were able to get pressure around the edge. But then Notre Dame was able to get some runs up the middle and hit some passes deep, and just pretty much do what they have been doing: just be consistent, keep on running the football, and wearing down the defensive front until eventually they just give up.
Well, the first play of the game was, 21 yards by Josh Adams?
And after that happened, I kind of felt like, oh, they're just going to march down there and score. Well, they didn't.
But it took them a little bit to get settled in.
Yeah. All right, let's go through the different position groups. Start with offensive line. Brian Kelly did say that they to help offset the rushing and run stopping ability of Chubb, they did have some extra help. They were trying to anyway. And the one time Alize Mack was taking him on, and it ended up in a sack. And it was, I'm not sure whose fault it was exactly. Brandon Wimbush was trying to step forward in the pocket, and that was a play that Chubb was going to win regardless of Alize Mack or Brandon Wimbush, I think.
Yeah, well, the first two series, it was a little bit of a struggle. I was a little bit worried about that offensive line there at the start. I mean, McClinchy didn't know what to do with the speed. I mean, it was like he was dazed, like in awe of the speed on the first drive. And then Tommy Kramer and Robert Haynes were having some issues on that right side. But, you know, Notre Dame, that didn't keep them from going to the right. And the one time they actually brought McClinchy came all the way over and blocked on the right, and it was a big gain. Actually, it was on the Wimbush. It was Wimbush's touchdown run.
Okay.
McClinchy came over and blocked on the right side. So they took a little bit to get settled in, but they stepped up, and you know, Notre Dame, they weren't going to get beat again. They did a pretty good job after they, you know, had a kind of a slow start. But I think it was the first series, the second one, Kramer got he got put on his butt right back there by the corner. I mean, they didn't know what to do. But overall, they made the adjustments they needed to. With the tight ends helping out, they did a pretty good job. And you would think that some of those runs, which I think was it Josh Adams, one of his long runs, was it his longest run, was Mustafer and Smythe, I believe. Or no, Mustafer and Bars. You know, it's not just the left side that's giving him breaking open those long runs. And it's all the guys. Well, not as much the right tackle spot, but
Notre Dame's postgame show, radio show with Darren Pritchett and Reggie Brooks, they were giving a lot of praise to Sam Mustafer and talking about how much he helps with his ability to move around and help with power running.
Yeah.
All right, tight ends. Alize Mack on Notre Dame's final drive of the half dropped a ball, and that's when he had a concussion. And Irish Don over in the forums created a post titled, "I just can't hold it in any longer." And I kind of agree. This is getting really frustrating. I do think that Mack has the highest upside, but like you mentioned, Randall, he dropped the ball before he hit the ground.
On that play, okay, yeah, he had a concussion. But, yeah, he dropped it before he hit his head. So, okay, fine, hit your head. I would have probably dropped it too. But he's got to hang on to that. If he's this...
At least until you hit your head.
Exactly. So, here's the thing with the kind of the whole tight ends and receivers. They're not... It's okay that they're not getting a ton of yards because the rushing offense is insane. But that means when you're called upon, you need to make the catch.
It's kind of like in years past, it would have been, oh, our passing game is really solid, but hey, if it's third and one, we need to be able to run the ball and convert. And now when it's third and six and we have an open receiver or tight end and the quarterback gets you the ball, you need to catch the football.
I mean, some of it might be because they're just not getting the ball, kind of like almost like a Navy receiver. I mean, Smythe had the most receptions with three separate, but those plays, okay, then when it's your chance to make a pass, catch the ball.
Mm-hmm.
These guys are struggling with that. But it is, I do think it seems like a bigger issue because they're not, if Alize Mack would have 10 receptions, you wouldn't really worry about that one.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If EQ would get 10, you know, there's some of these guys at the past the rate, they should have caught.
At the rate that Mack is going, if he would have 10 catches, he would have three drops.
Yeah.
Three or four drops.
They're just not taking, they have a limited amount of chances to make a play, and they're not taking advantage of it.
Let's just like move over then and talk about what wide receivers in with this too.
Okay. Well, Smythe, he made some good catches.
The touchdown.
And Wimbush was making the throws to him too.
The touchdown pass and catch was a thing of beauty. That whole series was a thing of beauty. It was an answer to North Carolina State's special team score, and it was just a quick response. Very impressive.
Yeah. And he had that sideline catch, Smythe had that sideline catch, where he kept both feet inbounds. Very impressive. And with Mack, he did a good job of drawing the pass interference call downfield. The only problem I had with that is Durham Smythe, it was third down, Durham Smythe was wide open and would have got a first down. But for some reason, Wimbush still threw it down the field, and they had to get that pass interference. But Smythe was right at the first down marker and was wide open, and it would have been easy. Wimbush was rolling out, it would have been easy to get the first down, but and we'll just say Wimbush thought he was going to get pass interference, but Mack did a good job of getting that.
And I do think that all the tight ends have been doing a really solid job in blocking, so even though, and the wide receivers for that part too, it's not like they're not doing a good job of catching the football when the opportunity is there, but they are doing a really really solid job in blocking, in pass protection, and in run blocking.
Yeah, and Mack is in there. You know, he is blocking. I mean, he's kind of the all-around player, and I do think teams kind of...
They know what he can do. They know the explosive player he...
So they do have to watch for him versus having Wisher or Smythe in there.
Mm-hmm.
He's more of a threat, and so it keeps defenses off balance a little bit. But the receivers... I was saying they're some of them are tough catches.
You're talking about the Brown EQ?
Yeah, he should have caught that.
I know the pass wasn't perfect, but it was there, and he had both hands on it, like Mack did too. To me, it's clear your most consistent wide receiver threat is Kevin Stefferson.
Yeah.
And even after... Just after a few games, to me, it's clear he gives you the most consistent chance of a good play.
Yeah,
and he had two catches for 24 yards and a touchdown.
And that touchdown catch was insane. But he's going up, getting the ball, and he's making a tough catch. He missed one right before that, but the defender got his hand in there and knocked it away.
Yeah, that was not a drop. That was just a great defensive play.
Claypool also had one he should have had. Yes, the defender had it up there, but the ball made it past the defender, hit him in the chest. He should have had it right there, and he couldn't hang on to it. Yeah, they're tough catches, but you gotta they gotta hang on to those. They're wearing these sticky gloves that. Anyways, but Stefferson, he's incredible. I mean, he's blocking as well. I mean, he blocked for. Wimbush, one of Wimbush's long runs, and he seems like he has more fight in him and more want something. He wants to make the play, and it seems lacking in some of the other guys. But, you know, they still 10 reception, 104 yard total, 10 receptions. It's not.
Yeah.
Oh, that Stefferson. Wimbush's pass would have just been a little bit to the right. Stefferson would have had that touchdown. He was past the defensive backs going deep, and he just couldn't quite make it to the ball. So he's that deep threat.
Mm-hmm.
One of those is going to connect. We've seen him go deep how many times, and they're just not connecting very often. But it's going to connect with Stefferson one of these days because Wimbush is getting better and better at throwing the ball.
And we saw it as a freshman, too, last year.
Yeah. And then Miles Boykin came in, should have had, I don't know, he was beating the defender, and the defender had to hold him back, or that would have been, I don't know if Wimbush's throw would have been on, but that could have been a potential touchdown as well.
Okay, running backs, running game. Didn't see
Jets. 33 trucking.
33 trucking. Didn't see Jet sweeps like we did a week ago, but we did see a whole lot of Josh Adams. 27 carries for 202
yards. Career high.
Yeah.
In carries. What did you think of the 33 trucking before the game when you first saw it?
When I first saw it, I thought it could be something a little bit better. No, it's fine. It's fine. Yeah. It's fine. I just think it could be... I didn't know... Right when I saw it, I didn't know what it was. Because I just... I don't remember where I saw it first, but I didn't know what it was right at first.
Yeah. I wish they would have waited till after the snap. Well, since
you're talking about timing.
Well, just everything. After the game, like during the game, I was like, okay, fine, this is cool. But before the game, I was like, oh no, this
you're
is
setting
just
yourself up
setting,
for failure.
Exactly.
Well, I didn't even see it before the game.
Okay.
I didn't see it till afterwards.
So, and I was like, just let the play on the field, you know, do whatever. But after that game, and I'm totally for it. I think at the timing, I would have almost waited till after. Well, here's the thing. Hindsight, this was perfect because everybody took notice, saw this 33 trucking, wondered what it is, and they go look at the North Carolina State, and Josh Adams put it on display for the country. So now looking back at it, it was perfect timing. I mean, I guess you could say it was perfect timing.
If he would have had, 30 carries for 50 yards, it probably would have been a little anticlimactic.
The most pathetic thing is that...
If I can say words right...
ESPN had tweeted something out about Saquon Barkley's stats. It was like 157 yards, 2 touchdowns, you know, another incredible day, you know, total yard. 105 of those came
off that return.
Off the kickoff return, and he had did he even have 50 yards? He had right around 50 yards total rushing yards. Josh Adams just goes out and goes over 200 yards against the number 6 rushing defense. So, anyways. But Adams, just incredible. I was surprised how long they kept him in there. I think the biggest thing, we're getting used to these long runs. We wanted 100-yard rushers for a game. Now he's getting it by halftime. And these long runs, he now has 8 rushes of 59-plus yards on the year. From 2002 to 2014, Notre Dame had a total of 8 that long. So, enjoy it.
And happy birthday, special. By the way. His birthday was, I think, yesterday. Today or yesterday.
Yeah. The only mistake, he tripped up. Was one of the last drives. He could have got a first down. But he kind of tripped up on himself and just missed it by, it wasn't even inches.
Deion McIntosh came in then, had 11 carries for 63 yards. And Williams, we never got his totals in, but Williams had 8 carries for 33 yards. Wimbush also rushed it. Are you ready to move over, talk about quarterback?
Yeah.
Wimbush rushed 7 times for 21 yards, and I think... He had a couple passing touchdowns, but one of the big plays was a 3rd and 10 where he took off running and converted, probably ran for 15 yards, converted that huge run on 3rd down. And he didn't have as many rushes as we've come to see. And Brian Kelly said in the post-game press conference that they had a guy spying on him and that North Carolina State was taking away when they did use the read option, they were taking away they were taking Wimbush away, so that's why he didn't end up carrying the ball as much as he has in weeks past.
Yeah, and one of the first actually designed runs for him was his touchdown run. I mean, the others were option, but he made some good reads on that as well. I mean, the one time he kept it and Josh Adams got destroyed close to the end zone, so it could have almost been another touchdown, but he made the right reads and he was stepping up in the pocket and you could actually see him go through his reads.
Well, that's what Brian Kelly
said.
He was
scanning the field.
Brian Kelly said this is the first time all year that he's gone through his full progression. And I think it'll be a little bit hit and miss throughout games. It will be a little bit hit and miss as far as if he is able to do that, partly because of, is he feeling the pressure right? Does he know that he's not going to get blindsided. But there's progression
yeah.
in his progression of reading
He's stepping up into the pocket. That throw to Smythe, he stepped up in the pocket, made a perfect throw to Smythe for the first down. You see more and more of that. The exciting thing is that he's still just a, I mean, you could say it's exciting. He's just a hair off on some of these deep throws, whatever. He can add so much more to this offense by just changing his, I mean, improving in a couple small areas. He's that close to even adding more to this mm-hmm. offense. I mean, he's left some touchdowns out there because, you know, he was just off just a little bit, but he keeps improving. And yeah, we're not talking about starting Ian Book again. I think all those people have left the...
Kind of like all the people that were calling to fire Brian Kelly.
Yeah.
Brandon Wimbush does have 11 rushing touchdowns on this season, and that is a single season record for a quarterback.
And Sean Kizer had the old record, so that didn't last very long.
All right.
But the offense overall, I think their time of possession, they had it for 10 minutes longer than what North Carolina State did. And I thought some of their long drives, they did a good job of mixing it up. They could throw the ball. They could run the ball. They could, you know, keep the defense honest. You know, it's Notre Dame, they're getting to that point where if they want to try to stop the run, Brandon Wimbush can beat him with his arm. And I think he's showing that, you know, they do need to cover the receivers because Wimbush is a threat. Claypool did get called for that unsportsmanlike conduct. Luckily, it was offset by the other guy. But some of the players were getting a little chippy with each other. Jalen Samuels, their star player, the announcer, which we couldn't see as far as the game, but the announcer said they saw at least three different players getting into it with him during the game. So there was some jawing going on out there.
Well, speaking of the penalties, special teams was riddled with penalties on both sides, on North Carolina State and Notre Dame. Again, Fink, on the opening punt return, made a bad decision about not calling a fair catch. And yeah. Hopefully this is hopefully this is the last time we'll see it for another few games. Hopefully
I doubt it.
Hopefully he'll wait until, I would say Navy, but who knows? Navy could end up being a close game. See, we're cynics. anyway, special teams, besides the punt being blocked for a touchdown, and that was due to the long snapper,
John Shannon.
Yeah, the protection was switched from one side to the other, and there was just miscommunication or not comprehension on Shannon's part as far as who he was, which side he was supposed to help block, and North Carolina State was able to jog in for the block and touchdown.
And he had a false start later as well. So that's the first we've heard about the long snapper.
You never want to hear his name.
Well, I know.
We've heard it now. Hopefully we won't hear
but
it again.
But this is his first year starting, so. But the kicking game was horrible, and it was windy.
Yeah, that's.
But even in, they said Tyler Newsom was even struggling in warm-ups for the game. So luckily they got away with it, being the kickoffs were bad, and then the coverage on that one, they almost broke it for a touchdown. It just wasn't a good day for the special
but
teams.
Notre Dame's return game did have one decent return, or maybe more than one. I guess I'm just thinking of the one before the Notre Dame's first touchdown.
Yeah.
All right. Randall, do you have our winner for the pound of coffee from Main Street Coffee House?
Yes, and I believe it for the first time ever, he predicted the exact score.
Hold on. We need to verify and make sure this is a legitimate prediction. But this coffee is from Main Street Roasters, mainstreetroasters.com. It is locally roasted coffee here in northern Indiana. And I think it's the best coffee. But you can, if you win the score prediction, you can judge for yourself. The way it works is they have a flavored coffee. They have regular coffee. They have single origin coffee. They have blends. And if you win the score prediction contest, you will get to choose whichever coffee you want. And it'll be free shipping, free everything, shipped right to your door as long as you live in the United States. And while we're just going to just double check and verify, make sure
Blaine Hergenrother on Instagram predicted 35-14.
Hold it. Way to go.
He was actually one of the first guys to get his score in. So.
Okay. Way to go, Blaine.
He does play football in high school, so maybe he knew, he saw some things.
All right, Randall, do we have anything? We've got Wednesday, we'll do our preview for Notre Dame versus Wake Forest.
And it looks like we're going to have an extra podcast for you guys tomorrow for on Tuesday. So,
all right, so you can look forward to that. Won't give away the details, just keep you anticipating. So, thank you guys for listening. Oh, and please, please do this. Please go make at least a top five of where you would rank the teams as of today before the college football rankings, official rankings come out. Go ahead and do it yourself and put a little bit of time into it. Set maybe 15 minutes aside and look at the teams, look at who they've played and who those teams have played to see if it is a legitimate team, and try to come up with your own and then tweet it at us. And in fact, I guess there's too many. Someone will be right. I was going to say we can give away a free pound of coffee for whoever gets it closest to the college football rankings, but I think that'd be really difficult to do because I'm not sure how we would.
Yeah, that would be.
If we would just do the top four, there'd be too many people that are right. But if we do 1 through 25, it'd be really hard to tell. It'd be hard to tell who got.
Do you have that much free time, Ruben?
No, I don't. I have 15 minutes, and I think most of our listeners do. So forget what I said about the free coffee, but go ahead and do that little exercise. Make your top four, and do tweet it at us, and then if there are one or two
or Facebook
or a bunch that are close, we'll mention it on Wednesday's podcast. So thank you guys for listening, and until next time, go Irish.
Go Irish.